Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, let's go. You're rolling with Jason and John. 92.9 FM. ESPN. And sometimes, you know, on a day like this, coming off of a holiday weekend, Memorial Day weekend in this case, I hope everybody had a happy one and a safe one. What you hear a lot is it's a Tuesday that feels like a Monday, right?
Yes.
Coming back.
Yes.
It's different for me.
Okay.
Feels like a Friday.
Oh, I like that feeling.
And I'm going to tell you why. Me too. I love the Friday feeling.
I know why, though, I think.
And I'm going to have it all week long.
Me too.
Because what I have done...
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our man, our co-host, John Martin's absence, and boy, are we close.
You have done an unbelievable job, Jason.
What I did, I broke it all down. So John's going to be gone for a month on paternity leave, whole 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. Right, got to break it down. And the way I did it, and the way I explained it to my 10-year-old son was, mm-hmm. You got 5 weeks. It's kind of like 5 days in the week that we do the show, right? Monday, Tuesday,
yep.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And if you catch my drift. So last week, the fourth week John was gone, was really my Thursday week.
Aha.
And this week, a shortened week, maybe,
number
because
five.
Of Memorial Day. You see what I'm saying? This is the fifth week.
Hey.
This week is my Friday.
This is Easy Street right here.
You know what I thought about when Easy we were Street. Out and we're going to get to conference finals and... Penny Hardaway getting everybody in, and so much to talk about. But I'm so giddy about John's return on Monday,
yes.
Coming back for June, that I thought about recording a video, welcoming him back.
Okay,
that maybe you and I could put together a little bit.
Sure,
maybe a little dance video. Remember, I was talking about dancing last week with Jeff Hawkins and the old Denim and Diamond days. That's how excited I am that maybe I'd put together a little dance video for John.
Excited.
And just sort of remind him where he sits.
Yes,
like where his,
what the door
the
is.
Name,
yeah.
Play the door. Welcome him back on in. Yeah. Y'all seen them gifts? Got. I'm gonna be stepping to work.
You know,
Monday with John Martin coming back, and like we said, I'll be holding the door for him. In all seriousness, think he's got a trip to Chicago this week.
Yep.
Like, enjoy the rest of it, mm-hmm. brother, because the duty calls. And John Martin, our great friend, my co-host, my friend, will be back this coming Monday. It's like a Friday all week long for me.
Jason, for our listeners who aren't aware, John walks in and out of the studio during the show, the whole show. So we're not getting the pacing that we usually get where he does the segment, walks out. It doesn't go smoking. He's not even
weird,
a smoker.
He's not, that's what's so weird about it, bro.
Yeah, like he's not doing Black and Mild.
He's not a smoker, but he goes out every segment. It might be, you know, just a part of John having to get up, getting a little...
energy.
Know, yeah.
Yeah.
And
breather.
I don't know the deal if he's, you know, if you get in a deal where you're in a closed space for a long time, you got to get out after a while. But John loves to take breaks. Anyway, we're going to welcome him back.
We got
all
a new
break
snack machine
and everything
for him,
else.
I think, over there.
Snack machine has been updated. That'll be good news for John coming back.
Yeah, that's
back.
What I'm he saying. He'll enjoy that.
He's having to get snack deliveries brought in.
No more Uber
Eats. He can
Uber
now
Eats.
Go to the machine. So that's all been updated for him. We'll have his digs ready for him next Monday when we get. It's Friday all week long.
I love it.
I'll tell you what. I'm glad it's Friday because these Friday all week long, put it that way. These conference finals have let me down.
Yeah, man, it's pretty predictable at this point.
It is, and I saw you sneaking in picks on, what was that, on Sunday?
I went 500 on the two, by the way, so it's basically even.
Well, 2-1. right? On the actual game
picks. Oh, the picks.
Set aside the bonuses.
I forgot the Friday picks. I put a couple of bonuses in there.
I got you down for 2-1. That's a winning weekend.
It's predictable,
for you,
Jason.
Which, unfortunately, for our fave Brad bettors, that's not going so well for you. Didn't go so well for the Pacers.
Yeah.
They're swept. They're up out of here. 105-102. They lose in game 4 last night.
Sorry.
You mentioned it. There wasn't. I guess the drama was that the fact that the Pacers, you know, had the lead late in these games, but no drama in the sense that you just never thought that Boston was out of it. You kind of always thought they would walk them down, especially the last two without Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah.
They sweep them. Jaylen Brown named your Larry Bird Eastern Conference Finals MVP. He looked surprised.
Looks really good.
He looked surprised, and I'll tell you what, he wore it well afterwards. Mm-hmm. I think he deserved it, even though certainly Jason Tatum had a case for it. Finals will start on June 6th, so they've got a nice little rest up no matter what happens in this Dallas-Minnesota series. And let me tell you about that. Dallas in full control.
Absolutely.
I've just, you know, and I've been coming around. Last week, you heard me last week talking about their defense and how really I just feel like it's been so key in terms of their run and how I'd underestimated them at every turn. And here I am again, you know, looking at this Dallas team, maybe on the brink of a sweep. We'll see tonight. More on that a little bit later. But, boy, have they been in control. Boy, has Luka been phenomenal. And then Kyrie. This series.
Oh, boy.
You know, especially after a quiet series last series, he has absolutely exploded, had 33, of course, in that Sunday night win for them, 116-107, which I believe, Brad, you got on Twitter and threw in that Dallas, that you like
yeah.
Dallas as the favorites in that game and ended up covered. We lost the very colorful Bill Walton over the weekend, passed away at the age of 71. Certainly a special connection when it comes to Memphis and the Memphis State UCLA connection. That was the 1973 championship game, which, of course, Bill Walton went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
21 of 22 from the floor in a 44-point performance against Larry Finch and the Tigers. Two-time NBA champion, two-time national champion, a Naismith and a College Basketball Hall of Famer. Did it all and certainly lived life to the fullest. Had a zest for life that you were reminded of every time he spoke. You know, we were talking to Cottrell Macklin last week and sort of his philosophy of life and much like his
enjoyed
father.
That Friday.
Trying to be a positive influence. Have on everything and everything you touch and everyone you come into contact with. That's what Bill Walton
yes.
was doing. There was no question. And a lot of times it's weird, and we'll get into Bill Walton and sort of our thoughts on him. But it's we sort of eye-rolled him in many ways.
Yes.
If you he'd be on those Pac-12 games late at night. If you went on Twitter,
oh, yeah.
he'd be getting blasted. I've got the sound down. I can't stand listening to Bill Walton. It's right. We were kind of rolling our eyes at his approach there. Now, so you know, strikingly at the end of his life, at his approach to me, he cut out his own. He carved out his own path mm-hmm. in terms of as a media guy. And I think that's what you got to respect about Bill Walton. He never defined himself as just a basketball player. He was always evolving, it felt like. And so whether we were rolling our eyes at him or not toward the end of his broadcast career, whatever else, I think we always respected him. And the thing we brought up too, Brad, real quick, that 30 for 30 shed some
light. That's good.
That recent 30 for 30 on Bill,
yep.
which must have aired within the last year.
I mean, I was just looking it up.
I think it was a three-part series. Yeah. We had talked about it here on the air, how much it just, you know, it just shed a light on him for a guy like me that was too young to have seen the best of Bill, obviously, at UCLA as one of the best college players ever put on a uniform.
Called the luckiest guy in the world.
Luckiest guy in the world. We talked about it. I remember talking about it on air and talked about how much you come away from that, not just respecting Bill, obviously, if you didn't already, but liking him even more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, you know, it odd now, random timing that came out. And sort of capped his career and put it in a nutshell. Lose him over the weekend, certainly thinking about his family. Tigers and Penny Hardaway had some, will get some news this week, made some news over the weekend in the case that saw where Parth Upadhyay over the Daily Memphians got everybody's reported out of the transfer to Memphis. So Penny Hardaway will have just about everybody except David Jones, who will find out something on by tomorrow. I'm hoping between now and tomorrow. Yeah, 10:59 Central Time, the deadline for David Jones and other college guys testing the waters to pull their name out to maintain their college eligibility. So we'll have some news on that, figure out whether or not David Jones could officially rejoin. We've said what we think, meaning that basically he should. It's the best thing for David Jones' career. We'll get that news this week, but obviously we'll talk about, you know, Penny Hardaway checking off the box as Parth put it, and it's sort of the way that Penny's put it, of having everybody, the majority of his team, here by June 1, which obviously is this Saturday marking the start of the summer session for those guys, and you can do summer workouts. Team Thad will be going to give you the update on that as they went through the final EYBL session 4 over the weekend. Did they advance to Peach Jam? Did they not? We know we have high expectations this year. We'll tell you how they fared over the weekend without one of their star players, Jasper Johnson, a top 10 prospect for 2025 who was out for Team USA. We'll tell you how Team Thad fared. SEC spring meetings underway. I know Brad's got his finger on the college baseball pulse as well. Tennessee, a number one seed. Mississippi State.
We got screwed.
That's what I heard. So I'll be interested on Brad's take of why Mississippi State is not hosting in the College World Series. Tennessee, we mentioned, did get the one seed. So before we get to all that, obviously a lot to get to. 11:30 or so, we'll talk to Grind City Media's Jessica Benson, host of the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt, and host of the Grizzlies pre- and post-game shows. Of course, here on 92.9 FM ESPN, Celtics in the finals for the second time in 3 years, and Dallas knocking on the door. We'll maybe get some early predictions. Can Minnesota stretch this thing out? Does it matter? Boston's going to have a lot of rest. They're going to get Porzingis back. We'll talk to Jess about the NBA playoffs at noon. We'll do the rundown like usual around 12:50 or so. I'm thankful that we've still got Minnesota and Dallas around for Fade Brad. Again,
yes.
with the conference finals in the East now done, we've got till June 6th. What is that, next Thursday?
Next Thursday
before the finals. So we are running out of games versus the spread in this postseason for Brad to pick.
Yes. Now, I do think I went 500. I offered two bonus picks, right, this weekend?
Yes, but they don't count on your record.
It doesn't count on the record?
No, not your record versus the spread in the postseason. Those have just been their own thing, those bonus picks.
Well, what about the picks I made online about the regular games this weekend?
Well, you had two going into the weekend.
Yep, and then I made two.
And you slipped. Well, I just saw the one.
I had two. I think I slipped another one in there on the Celtics yesterday. Online.
Oh, I didn't
so
see
it's
that
been
one.
Documented. Well, you
and
also
you're saying
have the,
you're saying you lost that one?
I lost that one. I won the first one.
We need it then.
Yeah, that's why I was putting this out there because I won the little bonus pick I floated.
Oh,
and
I
then
didn't
I
realize you put one in
last
night.
I'll have to go back and make sure that I put it on the internet, but I think I put it onto the ether for the record.
Pardon me for missing that one. I was full of burgers and hot dogs.
No, you're not paying attention. You should be paying attention to Twitter. For
wings that I've done, so I missed your pick last night.
Make sure I get this out there.
You slipped one in on Dallas, Minnesota.
Here it is, and I'm retweeting it now just so you
see
it. It was Boston -7.5. They did not cover the number.
Let me tell you something. First off,
I just retweeted it there.
First off, I didn't like you slipping these in.
I know.
Because they go against
the premise of the on-air bit.
And what have we done? Consistency has been our key.
Well, we only got so many games,
and so when you're going out slipping them on Twitter,
I just put it out there.
Our listeners are not hearing that, and like me last night, some of them may have missed it.
I get it,
but that's okay because in this case, we're going to accept them because actually
the
loss
helps us. I wanted to put that one out there.
It helps our percentage and those that were fading you. Again, though, we've tried to keep them on air, Brad. I'll tell you what, you're starting to feel yourself. And you want to go out every night, and that's fine, but we have to keep the bit consistent.
Okay.
We're gonna count this because frankly
we need the loser too.
We need it. Okay, Fade Brad's gonna be at 12:50. He's gonna pick tonight's game. Frankly, we need the series to continue, so we've got some Fade Brad segments this week. That's just the facts. Yeah. Then at 1:25, we'll do what we've done every Tuesday about that time last few weeks, and so grateful to have him. We'll talk to Odyssey NBA insider Nick Friedell about these conference finals.
Like that.
Kyrie Irving, what he's done. But let me tell you something. You shouldn't say Kyrie Irving before you say Luka Doncic.
I agree. It's been a great series for
this
both of
dude,
them.
This dude, yeah, and remember, and he's supposed to be questionable
God,
tonight.
He's so good.
With a knee.
He's the face of the league.
But let's be real. He's playing, and it doesn't look like this injury has slowed him down.
Not at all.
These injuries, these knocks have slowed him down whatsoever. He's been tremendous, and we've talked about it throughout these conference finals on both ends of the floor.
Yes.
And we'll get to it. But the way he makes... And Lively got hurt in his past game. We'll see how that affects them going forward.
Uh-huh.
But the way he makes Lively and Gafford offensive threats with the alley-oops, it's not just him because Kyrie can do the same thing. Kyrie can be going down the lane, drop the ball, but he's knowing Gafford's going to be there or Lively's going to be there. He can just throw it up to them. The way they have made what's essentially just two guys that are just – you would not throw the ball into them and say, go score me a basket. Not Lively, not Gafford, neither one of
them.
And yet you make them huge offensive threats by the way those two guards, Doncic, Luka, are able to – Doncic and Kyrie are able to penetrate and then suck the defense in and those guys are catching the lobs. It's nearly unstoppable with how the good. What otherwise you're giving up a floater or a shot to Kyrie. Same thing for Doncic. And so it's just a formula that Minnesota, despite the fact that they had the number one defense in the league this year, they have not been able to figure out. It's made Karl Anthony Towns look like slop this series, and they've got to be questioning that. So we'll talk to Nick Friedell about all that at 125. Obviously a lot to get to, so much trying to wrap it all up that we've taken about half of the opening segment here. Let's try to get to as much of it as we can in Cap or No Cap.
Cap. It means lion, but built different. Now it's Cap.
I'm going to say cap.
For No Cap.
I'm going to say that that's No Cap.
On 92.9's Jason and John Show.
Cap or No Cap? Cap meaning false, No Cap meaning true. For those of you who don't know the lingo here.
Yep, get the emoji. I heard they're just catching on over to ESPN.
They are finally, they're stealing your bits, Jason.
Catch up.
They're stealing bits from 92.9 Memphis.
Folks have been using Cap or No Cap for years, and we probably stole it from somebody else.
What's the respect bit they do on the morning show? I hear a respect bit that and it plays the RESPACT music just like you use, so they're listening in Bristol. Let's start with this Boston series that was done last night. Boston didn't take the Eastern Conference Finals, but Indiana gave it to the Celtics. Is that cap or no cap?
It's cap. The Celtics took it, but a lot of the story today is about how Indiana in position. I got the stat, and Jeff was talking about it. ESPN's got it. What was crazy about this series, which obviously was all Celtics, you sweep them, was that the Pacers had at least a 90% chance to win at some point in the fourth quarter of games 1, 3, and 4, three of the four games.
Right.
At least a 90% chance, according to ESPN's win probability meter. And in games 3 and 4, of course, they didn't have Tyrese Halliburton. They were in 3 of those 4 games, not just in them, but in control.
Yeah.
Celtics trailed in the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter in each of those games, 1, 3, and 4. There were opportunities, and I went crazy in game 1 about how they blew it and Halliburton couldn't slow down, about how they just blew it. But there were opportunities to shut the Celtics down in 3 of the 4 games. You had the lead. You were in control. Boston outscored Indiana 54-29. Over the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter in overtime in this series. Again, that's by 26 points. Indiana did not know in the clutch how to slow down. Fastest team in the league, one of the fastest paces in the league, did not know how to slow down and finish. Now, that said, in their defense, you know, super competitive efforts in games 3 and 4. Now they're back at home, but you're doing it without your leader, without Tyrese Halliburton. And so to be in those games is a credit to them in the first place. But my gosh, did they blow them down the stretch. That is a part of the story. But let me tell you what, let me tell you some other teams that hadn't been to this point, like the Celtics have. We keep mentioning it. Jaylen Brown, 6 conference finals. Tatum, 5 of them. They're the ones that have been here. And they could sense that in every game. We talked about, you know, the way they walked Indiana down. Never got in any way, Brad, you know, flabbergasted, never got thrown. Unflappable in the sense that it didn't matter how many they were down those final 3 minutes. If it wasn't Jaylen Brown making a play, it was Jason Tatum or Drew Holiday or Derek White last night hitting the go-ahead three off of a drive, off of penetration by Jaylen Brown. He's wide open, knocks it down. Felt like he's knocked down every three just about in these playoffs, Brad. Every big shot feels like Derek White has done that. Who got the steal at the end on Nembhard? Drew Holiday. It's just their time. And one thing I've had to sort of, you know, go back on and reexamine is how I thought in trading Marcus Smart there was a chance that team that felt like Tatum and Jaylen Brown didn't want to step up in terms of go-to time, that felt like he was so much of the heart of what they did in terms of vocal leader, everything else, you questioned whether losing that would cost them at this point in the season. It has not, because you've got a champion like Drew Holiday making plays on both ends. Derek White has stepped up into the best two-way players in the league, and particularly efficient from three offensively in these playoffs. And then you've got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum both doing their thing. Hell, Horford, Brad, in game 3 hit 7 threes. He's going to be 38 years old in June. And so they're just built for this. And so to say that Indiana blew it all, as opposed to that 51% of the story is Indiana doing it, as opposed, you know, and 49% is wrong. Boston has been in this position. They've been here before. They're more loaded than ever, more ready, more poised for this time than ever. And frankly, they took it because there's levels to this. And Anthony Edwards is learning that. I mean, again, this is second conference finals for Luka, what, in the last couple of years here. They have been there. Anthony Edwards is learning. There's levels to it. right? And and so did the Pacers, obviously, this year, going up against a Boston team that's built for this. It was finals or bust all season long. And so it would be cap to say that Indiana blew it more so than Boston took it.
I have it as cap as well. Here's the like you, here's what I would say.
It's disrespectful to Boston. This was a hell of an effort.
It was also no cap in the sense that if you're talking about making it a series, you blew game one, you know, you probably could have made it more of a series.
Again, 90% chance to win in 1-3 and yeah. 4 in those
so that's inexcusable, and so they didn't make it a series because of Indianapolis. Yeah,
you were always going to lose, especially once Tyrese Halliburton re-injures the hamstring. But
it wasn't a series, though.
You give Boston more credit than we're blaming Indiana. Again, shorthanded, benefited from some injury luck in these playoffs as the sixth seed. Now, you can say, too, obviously, Boston did too.
Yeah,
and especially not having to go against Tyrese Halliburton, but that Boston, their depth, their poise,
they was great. They should win it.
No excuse not to win the championship this year.
Let's go to this Mavericks series. Anthony Edwards has learned a valuable lesson in calling out Kyrie before they even started the Western Conference Finals. Is that cap or no cap?
It's no cap. He has learned a valuable lesson. Like, it kind of goes back to what I said there on the last one, that there's levels to this. And I'm not going to lie to you. Hold up my hand. We loved it. We loved it when after game 7 he said, "I got Kyrie." Like we loved the confidence.
First thing he said.
It frankly, we put it on the pro side, that this guy with his confidence, his swagger, reminds us of a young Mike, but he's 22 years old and he's already winning playoff series. Mike didn't win his first one until like 25. Our point was, he's ahead of schedule. We can't believe how it's all coming back. And what it's been a reality check. Mm. It has been an absolute reality check for us in this series. Obviously, Doncic and Kyrie both go off for 33 points. It's Kyrie here, though, particularly. Kyrie, who is averaging 27.7 points on 53% shooting this series. Again, we mentioned the 33 in the last game in Game 3 to put them in complete control, to help put them. Remember, he was quiet last series. Two single-digit scoring games last series. Brad, 15.7 points. He was shooting 44% against OKC. Now, they win that series 4-2, but remember Kyrie, and again, he was doing a lot of other things, assists, drawing attention, but he was way down offensively. Anthony Edwards woke him up, and we saw earlier this season a series when Charles Barkley was asking Kyrie about being called out, and Kyrie smiled about it, and he said all the right things, and yeah, man, appreciate it. You know, yeah, we heard it at the dinner table and everything else. Was real nice about it. But you could clearly see he has been motivated in this series, and he's had a great regular season, average 26 points.
Yep.
He was quiet last series, and you gave him clearly more motivation. They are down 3-0 and being controlled in a way by this now looking super experienced Dallas team, being controlled in a way he never thought. Hell, the scout over at the Athletic, the front office, the coach, all had Minnesota in 6. I had Minnesota in less than 7, in 6. Going into this series. Brad, you had Dallas. So we're going to give you some credit. You said 7 games. They're not going to need it.
Mm-mm.
So I'm going to give you some credit, though, for picking Dallas in this series.
Yeah.
They are in complete control. I did not see Minnesota getting dominated this. They've got their fans, Cottrell Macklin, I'm assuming, among them, questioning whether or not they need to dump off Karl Anthony Towns right now.
Yep.
Because let me tell you something. Who's been the most valuable big for
Gobert.
Them?
Gobert.
Well, it's been Naz Reid.
Yeah. I mean,
yes, Gobert. Gobert's been in and out, but there have been times, obviously, where he's been hugely
critical.
Naz
has been a scorer for
them. And he is hugely critical to their defense, but Naz Reid has been there every game
for them.
He's their
score guy, yeah.
Karl has gone in and out, Mr. Invisible.
Yep.
That's the guy, and especially on that contract,
yep.
I'd be looking at and saying, especially where they are with the apron and everything else, the payroll, the tax. That's the guy I'd be looking at and saying, man, you know, going forward, can we do it without him? Some of their best games have been when he hadn't played well at all. I'm not saying Karl Anthony Towns hadn't been huge for Minnesota this year, but again, going forward with their cap questions, he's played that bad this series where you have to look at him and examine how much of a part of this he is going forward.
I agree. No cap. Anthony Edwards had to sort of eat his words here a little bit after doing that.
Levels to this, and he absolutely learned a valuable lesson.
Yep. Yes. Let's go to the Knicks and what the Grizzlies are trying to put together in the offseason. The Knicks forward, Mitchell Robinson, would be a great trade acquisition for Memphis. Cap or no cap?
We'll do this as the last one before we get to Jessica Benson. This comes from an ESPN story posted today over at ESPN Plus by Chris Herring, ESPN senior writer who did NBA free agency 2024, 10 blockbuster trades deals that need to happen this offseason. Just the kind of offseason content.
This is what we need.
And speculation. That we'll, again, he's not predicting these things.
Right.
He's saying, though, it's what we need. If you scroll on down and it goes past one that it hurt me because it's got Jared Allen should go to the Washington Wizards. Of course, we've talked about Jared Allen here and how you could make
like
the money work with Marcus Smart, the Cleveland big, who obviously Cleveland may be looking to get off of with Mobley. We've talked about how perfect a fit he seems like. Here's what he says for the Grizzlies as one of the 10 moves across the NBA. He says, go get Mitchell Robinson. Now, Mitchell Robinson does a lot of what we've talked about you need next to Jared. Rebounding, shot blocker, rim runner. You can throw him alley-oops. His money, Jared Allen's due $40 million over the next two seasons. Mitchell Robinson, $14 next year and $13, 12.9. So $27 over the next two.
Yep.
So the money is better with Mitchell Robinson. That said, and again, 1.9 blocks over his career. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
You think about the defense that you could have, and particularly if you went about it the way that Herring suggests, which is just moving on from Luke Kennard, opting him in and then trading him as a part of this in terms of making the money work, right? You could see Marcus Smart, Jaren Jackson, Vince Williams at points, now with Mitchell Robinson, 1.9 blocks per game for his career. That's a hell of a defense. That said, I'm going to tell you the reason why I think you shouldn't do it. He's not the one. At least what concerns me the most. It's the injury history. Six seasons for the Knicks. Here's the games played. 56-61, 31-72, 59-31 this season. So to sum that up, over the last four seasons, Mitchell Robinson has averaged 48 games played during the regular season. We know, obviously, he went down this year. You can say some of it was a cheap shot by Joel Embiid pulling him down, maybe re-aggravating what was going on. But he missed a good chunk of the season, allowed actually Isaiah Hartenstein to move up past him in the rotation. And it's made Hartenstein, frankly, looking more valuable as a free agent now and possibly made Mitchell Robinson tradable in terms of if they can't sign, if they can re-sign Hartenstein, why you need Mitchell Robinson at this point? And so he's a guy that you would look at and say fits the Grizzlies for a lot of reasons. The injury history would bother me. Not that Jared Allen doesn't have one, and the ages fit. I think 25, 26 for both of them. The ages and the timeline fit the Grizzlies perfectly, but I'd just be wanting to go in a little more for Jared Allen, who does more around the rim, is more of a scorer, even though you're not looking for that. I know what I'm getting. It's a little bit higher level than Mitchell Robinson. But if it ended up that way, I don't think, and it's Kennard you're moving on from, and I'm keeping Marcus Smart, because it feels like a lot, Cleveland may ask for Marcus Smart in that deal to get Jared Allen. I'm willing to live with it because he fits. It's just you will have to hope and pray that he stays healthy. That's the thing. And over the last four seasons, he hadn't been over that 48 game average. Jared Allen hadn't been below 51. In the last four seasons, and so even with an injury history, hadn't been to that level, and so I got injury concerns about Mitchell Robinson, but again, it would fit from a lot of ways. I'm going to say that it's cap though, because I just think there's a better fit in Jared Allen. Don't let Jared Allen get traded to the Washington Wizards. Like, be willing to come up off of something, to go get him. Besides Marcus Smart, whether it's a future first rounder, whatever it is, this pick that they've got this year. He would be my priority over a Mitchell Robinson because, again, I want to be super contender next year, real contender. Jared Allen puts me there, Brad. We talked about it. You dropped to 25th in rebounding. You dropped to pedestrian and offensive rebounding. Those were elite areas for you. Jared Allen gets me back there, and I feel a little bit more confident about his health going forward.
I agree with you, but I would say the one worry
fits,
I have
though,
as the Jared Allen deal, especially, and I know you might use other pieces besides Marcus Smart, but I'm worried about him as an asset. Like, is he as valuable as we think he is or was when we traded for him? I think the answer is no. Yes. I'm concerned.
Look, you could argue that you saved some tread on the tire with how much season he missed. You could also point to the fact that he had three straight 20-plus scoring games right before he went out for the season. He had not done that in his career. He was settling in to the spot that you had envisioned for him. And so we don't – it's too early to make that judgment. Back to your point, though. Because you've done all that, you've probably kept the value of him up.
Right.
You've saved him. You've preserved him.
That's
fair. He was playing well offensively before he went out. And frankly, a guy like that whose body history mm-hmm. is what the concern is going forward, it was like an off year for him. Let's be real. But especially second half of the season when you weren't playing. They shut you down. And so that, to your point, your value's as high as it's going to be. I mean, frankly, you probably risk that value dropping off mm-hmm. him coming back and playing. So, yes.
That's a good point.
I think his value, you haven't heard it. He's another year older, but you saved a lot of mileage this year in shutting him down.
Good point.
And so I think a lot of teams, maybe even a Cleveland, looks at him as that's a win now guy we can put next to Donovan. All right, we need some defensive guys. We didn't have that on the perimeter this year. On a blanket with my baby. Jessica Benson is the host of the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurd at Grind City Media. And host the Grizzlies pre- and post-game shows here on 929 FM ESPN. You can follow her on X and IG at Jess Benson TV. She's very kind to join us on Tuesdays at this time. Jess, I saw the picture, but as I was scrolling through your social media, I could not exactly tell where you were. You're returning from where?
The Florida.
Oh, beautiful.
I was somewhere in that 30A stretch in the Rosemary Beach, Alice Beach area, and it was beautiful.
I always find that first day back from vacation just tough to do.
I think maybe the vacation should have continued, for another day.
Sure you handled it seamlessly and flawlessly. It doesn't feel like we've got much, and especially in terms of what's left in the way of conference finals to look forward to. Like that, as close as those Pacers and Celtics games were there down the stretch, that was one-sided, and it's over. Now we've got to wait till next Thursday. And it doesn't feel like I'm going to get much more out of Minnesota in this series. Dallas certainly in control up 3-0. I don't know what's left to watch other than what feels like the inevitable, Jess.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that the Timberwolves win tonight just for the sake of preserving the conference finals for another couple of days, because no matter what happens, sweeps are for both series or whatever, it's not going to give us the NBA Finals until June 6th.
Yeah.
So I might have to really dig into my Stanley Cup playoff bag and really give myself over to some hockey for a week and a half or so. But it is, I know you probably felt the same way, like being in this industry and talking about sports each and every day, you start to feel the tightening of the end of the NBA season and the recognition that summer is here, Memorial Day is past, we enter into the heat and humidity, and we enter into where content is at a premium. And so you start trying to figure out how you're going to fill the rest of the year. You already have the draft day of June 26th circled and dotted, counting down for what the Grizzlies will do. But there's really the only hope is best NBA Finals matchup possible. And at this point, I have talked myself into the Mavs and the Celtics would have some primo storylines that would allow us all to get swept up in what would hopefully be a good series.
What has struck you most? Because clearly in the Eastern Conference, no matter how you thought it was going to happen, we all had Boston going through. Now, a lot of us, including myself, clearly looks like we were on the wrong side here in the Western Conference Finals. I'd picked Minnesota in six. I thought they would handle business. So I've just been completely had to go on 180 here in terms of my respect level for Dallas. What struck you most about what Dallas has done so far in this series?
Yeah, I've been in awe. Coming out of that Nuggets-Timberwolves series, I think we kind of collectively looked at that as our NBA Finals, and look how the Wolves have dethroned the champions and Jokic and that defense. And then for the Western Conference Finals to begin, and we're just reminded that Luka Doncic deserves to be in the conversation of best player in the world, right up there with Nikola Jokic.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they don't just have Luka, but Kyrie Irving, who has come back into the Kyrie that we had known was there. We just didn't know if he was still there. Was he still fourth quarter Kyrie? Were they going to have, two players who represent a world-beating backcourt carry them through this postseason? And after Kyrie was so passive in the last series, I wasn't exactly sure what his placement would be, and instead they've just been wreaking havoc on the Timberwolves, and they're seemingly this wonderful defense can't figure out how to stop those two with 66 combined in game three. And when you have two players who have end-of-game situations, the confidence levels of the ball being in either of their hands, I mean, that's just such a bonus. And they have taken the reins thus far and made the Timberwolves look pretty silly through three games, not being able to close it out.
Not to get into too much of a preview, because I'm sure at some point we'll do that with you next week in terms of finals. Like you mentioned, it won't start till next Thursday. But just in terms of the matchup itself, if we get that Dallas-Boston series like we expect, it feels like it's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's time. Does Dallas have enough to keep them, you know, to keep it from being their time?
I think what's interesting is the time for Boston has been evolving to this point, right? Like reaching the NBA Finals 3 years ago, understanding what it feels like to not just come up short there, but then the disappointing end against the Heat last year, and being this assumed dominator who has fallen short of expectations, their own expectations, and then working through and figuring out, okay, we know it's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but then who are those ancillary pieces? And the addition of Drew Holiday has obviously been critical, and the continued evolution of Derek White, who has like elevated himself out of role player status. And we'll see what the status of Kristaps Porzingis ends up being. I think that'll play a big role no matter what. But then with the Mavs, it's like they did it in season. Right, like obviously you make the addition of Kyrie Irving, but then making those moves at the trade deadline of Gafford and of PJ Washington and how critical they've been, of seeing Jason Kidd evolve and how, you know, he's putting his team together and the game plans that he's rolling out, and Luka ascending into this particular level of, you know, world's best play at this given time. And so they are like the moment of now. And so I think that's an interesting juxtaposition of some team that has been growing into this moment and one that almost snuck up on us. Like, I don't want to take away from what the Mavs did during the regular season. I think they ended the regular season 16-4, and they were one of the best defenses coming after the All-Star break or after the trade deadline. But it still feels as if they snuck up on us and we didn't necessarily expect this. And they barely got past the Oklahoma City Thunder. That could have gone a different way. The series with the Clippers was obviously testy and a big test for them to get through, and now here they are. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, why not the Mavs be the teams that can make the Boston Celtics once again falter in a place that they've been before?
I've underestimated them at every turn, and it feels like I would be doing that. I probably shouldn't, and my hope is that it'll be a competitive series. And you know, you've certainly got some championship DNA in Kyrie. Like, it's not like a big part of them hadn't been there before. I must ask you, we were all saddened by the news when we saw it, you know, come across our social medias, our phones. But Bill Walton, you know, former Pac-12 ambassador. I mean, there's so many. You go down the list of things, but there at the end, and it's crazy, Jess, and it hadn't even occurred to me before I literally just, you know, literally put the words together to ask you the question that we were literally at the end of the Pac-12, and we're losing, you know, somebody who was a great, great ambassador, obviously, not just for that conference, but obviously of college basketball in general, of sport in general. You ever run across in your travels Bill Walton, or in terms of what you liked most about him? Because it seems like we're all sort of, you know, it's too bad we waited. We're all giving him his flowers today.
Yeah, as the Pac-12 ambassador of Memphis, this one hit pretty hard. You never know how a celebrity death is going to affect you until it happens. And like, this is one that truly made my heart sink. There is something beautiful about Bill Walton not living in a world without the Pac-12.
There's something beautiful about
that. The fact that his death comes the same weekend as the official end of it all, with the Pac-12 baseball tournament coming to a conclusion where USC lost to Arizona, but we don't have to talk about that. But it felt very poetic that, like, the biggest champion of the Conference of Champions went out with that conference. And I was thinking back on all the years that I was fortunate enough to go to the Final Four, and sitting down where our seats were, there were always coaches and former players and just, like, big figures in the sport. And, you know, you're like, oh, there's Jim Boeheim, there's Tom Izzo. And you kind of get accustomed to seeing, you know, big names in basketball. But the one person that every single time I saw him, I found myself taking a picture from afar, like creeping status, was Bill Walton. Like, it was just his presence brought about this, like, ethereal nature to being in an arena with him. And I never asked for a picture because I'm always too awkward to do that. But I really wish that I would have, because he's someone who just represented, like, the best of a former player who was a great player, a Hall of Fame player, who then embraced this broadcast career and also just embraced aging in a way where he always seemed so curious and genuinely excited about what was next, right? Like for young people, for the sport, for the world, yep. for music, whatever it may be. He just lived life with a level of, like, I'm excited and happy about this opportunity to get to live another day and learn something new. And that's just, there's a rarity to that. I wish it wasn't so rare, but he kind of embodied someone who I think we could all benefit from treating as a bit of a role model in how we do this world.
Yeah, I love what you said there, because it made me stop and think, like so many of the guys, and I'll just call them old heads, and I do that with a reverence, right? What they do in today is they badmouth the current. Oh, it was better yeah. then, and everything that you just said, and he embraced it, he loved it, he talked about the future, and always in that positive light. There was no question about it. Everything he seemed to talk about was always with a sense of positivity that you had to appreciate. We're talking to Jess Benson, of course, of Grind City Media. Let me ask you this, and since we're on college athletics, sort of, how does Memphis, and this is a big one, Jess, I mean, this is the question facing the whole athletic department and all of us, sort of, as we try to cover this, but in terms of Memphis athletics, that program that was at one time Memphis State going up against Bill Walton in that championship game, but now at this what feels like a crossroads, had the settlement last week between the NCAA and the Power Five. Feels like this is just for them, right? The revenue sharing plan right now, up $21 million a year that you're going to share with your student athletes. Set aside the whole, they're going to pay athletes back to 2016, that part of the settlement. What's the path for Memphis, Jess? How foggy is it in terms of going forward? We've always been the school that found a way to have without, right? And just when you thought they were positioned so well, it feels a little bit like they're pulling the rug out from underneath us. Just do you see the path forward? A lot of folks were, it was kind of dark in here end of last week.
Yeah, and it's brutal timing for Memphis coming off of the momentum of FedEx's generosity and trying to help handhold into this current wild, wild west of figuring out how to use NIL collectives to compete with the Power Five, soon to be Power Four. I'm trying to, what are we calling them now? Like the Autonomous Five, whatever the language is. The big dogs and the little ones who are at risk of getting left behind is what it essentially shakes out as. And you just look at the idea, like, is the American Athletic Conference going to pay up $21 million annually to the schools within, or to the athletes at the schools within their conference? And I don't know the definitive answer to that, but my assumptions would be no. I don't think the budget is there. And if you're Memphis, you're just desperately hoping that perhaps the next dominoes fall with the ACC, and that's what everyone is holding on to. But yeah. It just, you're not in control of your own destiny, and that has to feel incredibly frustrating. And even I have a number of questions with how this continues to shake out. Like, will this unanimously be accepted by players? Will some opt out? Will some still think that they deserved more? How are they going to do the back payments? Is it a single sum of money for everyone? And how do you justify, player X getting more than player Y if player X has with higher profile? There's a lot of questions still to be answered, but the one thing that feels really sure is that this is yet another step on the ladder in the direction of the power, whatever, living in a universe that is further and further away from the schools that are not within their conferences. And we've seen that, being continued by expansion and what's happened with the college football playoff. But this is just, it feels like a cementer of sorts. And that's a hard pill to swallow if you're Memphis.
Well, and it shouldn't be on them, but just in this indirect way, it feels like it puts these expectations squarely on this Memphis football program, and particularly at the time that you are at, like you said, I mean, you want to seize the moment. You're so well positioned, but it does feel like if we're talking about like a throwback to what Cincinnati did a few years ago, which inevitably helped them get pulled up, what they did with their football brand in the college football playoff, it just feels like, and maybe unfairly, Jess, it just feels like a lot of this. If you want to make sure your brand's hot so that when that ACC busts open, you're still at the front of the line, that cashing in right now with Seth Hennigan and these transfer portal additions, that these ones that you brought in from the SEC seems that much more critical to do it right now because of all this. But it's unfair, isn't it, to put that all on
it's
them?
It's unfair, but it's the reality, though. It is the reality. Like, I don't think it's the hyperbolic to say this is the most important season and that this football is great. And that does feel unfair. But it is how this is how the cookie has crumbled. And you now sit in front of this season and the lawsuit and the settlement goes into effect or is presumed to go into effect 2025, 2026 season. So you have one more year and it's in this holding pattern. Like, can you grasp on for dear life and be picked up, or are you going to be left behind? And so much of it feels as if it all depends on, is Memphis the group of five representative in the college football playoff this year?
Are you buying into, on the college basketball side of things with Memphis, are you buying into you can help a team's chemistry, it can pay off during the regular season if you get guys in earlier? And in this case, by June 1, looks like Penny's going to have the majority of the team. Are you buying into that narrative, Jess?
I think it's a great narrative to have. It's a hopeful narrative, right?
Certainly is.
You would presume the more time spent together. Listen, I'll put it this way. I think the more time you spend in a group of people, the better odds you have if that chemistry is going to fit together.
That's fair.
You can begin to develop that. I think, so much of this is, there's luck and there's smarts behind it. But some personalities sometimes don't fit, and that's happened with Memphis basketball a couple years in a row. And so at least now you're fostering an environment where, hey, everyone's here together. Let's have this kumbaya moment going into this season, all being on one page. And certainly it helps. It doesn't hurt. But I don't think it's the end-all, be-all of, like, yes, because you are here in the summer, absolutely these guys are going to like each other, they're going to play for each other, and it's all guaranteed to be upwards from here. That's still to be seen, but it's better than the alternative.
Yeah, I like the way you put it. It's not the fix. It's not the fix to what ailed your team last year.
But it's a help.
It can absolutely hurt you, and certainly can, absolutely help you, not hurt you. You wouldn't think to have him in here early. All right, last thing I got for you, and we're gonna have John Martin back next week, so you'll get your weekly troll dose of your teams.
Fantastic.
And everything else.
I missed it so
we'll get
much.
Back into our regular routine. He's coming back from, but we've settled into a nice little. A groove here where I ask you a nice little arts and entertainment question. You keep me up to date. I'm just curious, and I'm suspecting you haven't because you've been in Florida, but J-Lo's new flick. It's on Netflix. It's called Atlas. Many are blasting. Many are saying it's just another flop for J-Lo. I will say this. My wife turned it on. My son and I had no intention of being sucked in. It's on Netflix, and we were absolutely entertained. Her performance, I'm just okay. It was, but the movie itself and the scripting and the whole, AI and all that. New York Post, they called it a flop, but USA Today gave it 2.5 out of 4. I'm just curious. Any interest in seeing, if you haven't, in seeing Atlas with J-Lo? Very well done. Very well thought out. Not sure it was pulled off, but I was entertained.
To be clear, I think J-Lo has had some real cinematic hits that we overlook. And by cinematic hit, Monster in Law, Made in Manhattan, how can we forget Selena? She was great.
She was good at Selena. I can watch that anytime. I can watch Selena over again. I can.
Me too.
And I shouldn't mention this, but wasn't she acclaimed for like the whatever the stripper one was, like for her role in that?
Hustlers. She was fantastic. She tried.
She was actually really good
to get herself an Oscar in that.
Yep.
Not sure it was deserved, but she tried really hard, and she was good in that movie. I saw the preview for Alice. I was watching something on Netflix where the preview screen came up.
Yep.
And I was like, what is this?
I know she's not. She probably shouldn't be in space and fighting, in the.
Probably not. And we just had, I don't know if you were familiar with her piece, This Is Me Now, a love story, which was essentially like an
autobiographical.
It was bizarre. And now that's being highly scrutinized because her marriage to Ben Affleck is reportedly on the rocks as he has seen the light, according to reports, which is tough. And I saw that her $90 million Vegas residency may be in jeopardy because last album has flopped so badly and the tour sales are down so bad. So she's desperate for a hit.
Happening.
And I don't think this movie is it, but I am very much back, baked into everything that's happening with Jennifer Lopez right now. And so I feel like I kind of have to watch it in order to give myself an informed opinion on this new movie, Atlas. So I might throw it on. I'm really behind on things.
It's okay.
There are so many better things that I should watch rather than Atlas. But maybe I'll do it.
I've not. She's 54. I was just looking. Now, my wife couldn't stand it. She turned it on, and she absolutely just zoned out. She did not like it whatsoever. My son and I did. Maybe it was the special effects, though. But to be 54 and you're trying, here's what I think about J-Lo. She's going to be like Cher in the sense that even at 64, at 74, if she chooses to, she'll be able to go perform somewhere. Now, being at the top, that's over. Those days are over. But she can absolutely be a mogul like she is and be a success and can perform just about, I would think, for the rest of her career, much like a Cher. Would you agree with that?
No, but you're also talking to a Cher super fan.
Cher's
Vegas residency when I was in college. When I was I spent my 21st birthday going to, at the time, what was being billed as Cher's final concert.
Yes.
But then ultimately, you know, she's kept kicking. The thing that I think is different is that Cher has a lot of goodwill built around her. And there was also kind of like a pioneerism with Cher going back to the 70s and her, what do you call it? Not vaudeville show, but whatever her show was on TV that you would call it, and how she.
Yeah, variety show.
Thank you. And, you know, working with other artists and maybe not being the greatest singer of all time, but continuing to evolve with the times.
Yep.
And with J-Lo, it feels like there's been kind of a stagnation, and there is such a level of. I mean, she is a hated main character in the entertainment space, I would say. And it's kind of bizarre how it's happened. But I think so much of it has been because she's put such a continued spotlight on herself, both with the movie I was just telling you about, and then she had the Netflix documentary. And I used to actually really enjoy Jennifer Lopez and would have answered your question differently a couple of years ago by saying, yes, I think there will be a carried level of people who would love to just go watch J-Lo sing and shake her booty to her greatest hits. But I think that's kind of faltered off because she has felt like a representation of a not... relatable celebrity, like the least relatable of celebrities.
Wow.
And I think that will affect her legacy a bit. I might be reaching.
No, I feel educated. I don't think you're reaching. I feel educated, especially on comparing the two, how they're different.
And it was so weird. Like when she and Ben Affleck got back together originally, I think there was very much like a cheer section for that. Like, oh yes, this is beautiful. A second chance at, you know, true love. And now it's a jeer section. People are like, oh yes, save yourself, Ben. And that's not really fair. And I hate we do that to women sometimes, and it takes two to make a relationship. But it definitely feels as if there's been a shift in how we engage in Jennifer Lopez content. And it certainly doesn't help the Atlas movie that came out because, number one, people are ready to just completely dunk on it.
No doubt.
Straight off the bat.
And most did and said it's, you know, Sarah Connor. She's just, oh, this is a rehashed and...
Yeah.
I think many want to say that she's too old to play this part. I wouldn't say that. I thought she pulled it off. But, there is, though. There's a lot of J-Lo hate. And sounds like you're now one of them. And sounds like you're an official J-Lo hater, Jess. I'm going to go ahead and put you. But she did school me. She's not nearly on Cher's level. That's what I learned today.
If you can turn back time, you know, that's Cher right there.
That is Cher. Jess, you're so great to join us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Yes. Talk to you later.
Yep. She is Jess Benson. Make sure you're following her on X and IG at Jess Benson TV. She does the TikTok too, but like I like to tell you, that's going to be going away pretty soon. And so I was naive there, wasn't I, Brad, to try to put J-Lo and Cher